I can't even imagine being in high school with like middle school or high school with smartphones. Never mind an artificial intelligence watching me. Oh, great. A godlike intelligence is judging my every move. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about that bag of potato chips sitting next to you, listening to your conversation. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. But first.
But first, yes.
So quick housekeeping. The provider that we use for hosting the podcast is called Simplecast, and they're going to be down for maintenance from Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Friday, tomorrow. What's that? The 10th?
Today. Today, the day you're listening to this.
Yeah, well, does that's matter? Not accurate either. Should we even talk about this? It'll be too late. If you listen to this immediately and you want to listen to more tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern time, then...
Tough luck.
Yeah, tough. Download some stuff offline.
Yeah, they're going to be down for about an hour.
Yes. In other news, our mailing list is growing like gangbusters.
Yeah. Woo.
Hooray. We're up to 14 people.
And they love us. They really do.
Yeah. I should probably send them email.
Yeah. Yeah. You should probably do that.
So last week I forgot to send the email. Not used to it yet. Yeah. So probably for logical completeness, I will send one retroactively because my sense of order will be forever confused if one of them's missing. Mm-hmm. We'll certainly.
So if all of you will travel back in time until last Friday, then you'll be able to read it.
That would be fabulous. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll be able to solve this problem with fancy automation.
Yes. So that this calls for a small shell script.
Yes. It's best when people don't have to rely on my aging memory. But I think that's about it. I think we can jump into what is possibly the craziest technology advancement I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, I think so. Craziest and maybe creepiest. I don't know.
Yeah, it's right up there.
It's really cool, though.
So the jumping off point for this episode were a couple of related blog posts. One's actually a YouTube video, a scientific demonstration, and the other is a sort of long-form editorial article based in part on this technology research that creates a previously impossible level of surveillance to take place, certainly by the common person, so to speak. So someone who doesn't have access to millions of dollars worth of spy gear, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Where should we drill into this? Do you want to just describe the video? That might be the best.
Yeah, I think describing the video might be a good place to start. Okay, so the video is about using video to capture or to interpret and sort of reverse engineer audio. Well, no, reverse engineer is not the best word for it either. God, how do you describe this?
Imagine, so if we just paint the picture of the setup.
Okay.
So imagine a typical interrogation room type of situation where you've got a two-way mirror with like detectives standing on one side of it, and you've got a suspect sitting at a table, and there's a bag of chips on the table next to the dude. And on the other side of the mirror, along with the detectives, would be, at least the beginning of the video, it would be a very, what are they called? It's not like it's a high capture,
high speed camera,
right? That can capture a crazy high frame rate. And the suspect is in there talking to his lawyer. You're having a conversation, not allowed to listen in, but what these researchers did was they took a fake scenario sort of set up like this, and they passed the video through some sort of machine learning, it's all AI these days, mm-hmm. some sort of machine learning algorithm, and now the video camera could not pick up the audio. There's no bug in the room. There's no electronics in the interrogation room. The sound is not emanating from the room. But the camera plus this algorithm can recover what was said in the room and turn it into audio based on the vibrations that it saw on the potato chip bag.
Yeah. And it is wild how well it does it.
You can clearly understand.
Yes.
Like, so what it's doing is it's just making a waveform. I mean, this isn't crazy at all in a sense. It's what an electric guitar does.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just analyzing the vibrations that you're able to detect coming off of these objects. It's, to me, the wild part about it is how sensitive it is. I guess was a bigger surprise to me than than the fact that they were able to, you know, to generate sound from analyzing a waveform, and that part makes sense. I just didn't realize that there would be enough of a waveform there, you know, in a chip bag.
Yeah, another example they used, there was a plant and they were just looking at the leaves and you couldn't see the leaves moving whatsoever.
No.
Even in slow-mo. But it was enough that they could recover the sounds that were going on in the room. And if there wasn't too much noise in the room, you know, it was just like two people talking, you could clearly understand what they were saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, as if that wasn't mind blowing enough, then they did it with a standard video camera recording at a rate of 50 or 60 frames per second. And there was more noise and things were a little more garbled, but you could still make out what was being said and what was going on in the room.
So this is, I mean, this blew my mind hard, but now that I'm past that, I'm kind of like, okay, in a sense, it does remind me of like an electric guitar situation where you've got a body vibrating, a string vibrating, and it's disturbing the magnetic field above the pickups. And then that is converted into
electricity, which then is sent to the amp, which is then converted back into audio.
Right, which is no different than what we're doing right now, really. I'm vibrating the diaphragm in this microphone with sound waves. The thing that's crazy about it, and perhaps game-changing about it, is that there's not pickups or microphones or those things all over the place. Like, all of a sudden, your ears are extended to line of sight.
Yeah, it's like suddenly anything becomes a microphone.
Right. Like any body that can, right. Anything becomes, yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is. Where you can turn everyday objects into a microphone. So as long as you can see them. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine as sort of, it's so crazy. Because what's happening is cameras, which ostensibly originally were a tool that was used to capture images, create photos, you know, capture a something visual and make a picture, you know, so you could print it out or whatever. Now they're turning more like into eyes. And with this change, they turned into ears.
They turned into ears as well. And I mean, on one hand, you could be like, yeah, that's no big deal. Cameras have microphones on them too. But I don't know. There's something about it. You know, camera microphones aren't gonna hear through windows and doors, and there's a lot of cameras that we still use every day that don't have microphones on them. You know, there's still a lot of security cameras or just video footage, no microphone. And you know, recording audio takes up a lot of space, so there's a lot of practical instances where if audio is not needed, audio is not recorded.
Right. So recovering audio from something that didn't have it, or, you know, an old, the Zapruder film, like, something, you know, imagine. Right. But so our heads both went to the same place, like the scene in Blade Runner or the, just a general hilarious zoom, sci-fi. Enhance sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
You know, zoom, enhance, you know, like as in, and in Blade Runner, they did this thing where, you know, what was the name? Decker.
Yeah.
Where they had a photo from a scene. And it was so high resolution that you could keep zooming into any reflective objects in the room and see all around the room and pick up clues from stuff that was not in view of the direction the camera was facing. Mm-hmm. So this almost feels like it extends that to, oh, we've got this video of the room. Let's zoom into like, oh, that shopping bag over there and listen to what was happening near the shopping bag.
Or zoom into the window and listen to what was happening in the next room.
Yeah. And yeah, you could do, I suppose you could, there's such things as shotgun microphones and stuff where you could kind of extend your reach of your ear to very, very laser focused kind of way, but
you can't do it inconspicuously.
That's for sure. And certainly not with a relatively inexpensive camera. I mean, I'm sure I don't know how much a Shure microphone is, but I'm guessing it's expensive.
Yeah, you can't just do it with your cell phone camera.
Yeah, but so here's the thing. Like, the main article that linked to this video, which really blew my mind, was about the end of privacy because of autonomous cars. And when I saw the headline, I thought, oh, well, yeah, I mean, just the way the cars are going to work, they're going to have like sort of GPS, you know, who was in the car, because that person needs to be perhaps charged for the trip. And where did they go? So like Uber, you know, probably 4 or 5 times a week, Uber knows exactly where I was.
Right. And they probably have a history of that.
Right. So
if nothing else, they use it for analytical data.
Yeah. And so that's where I thought the article was headed based on the headline. But then when I got into it, they were like,
No, it's
far worse than that, because
it's the fact that the cars are recording everything
around them. Right. In 360 degree HD video at all times. So scenario, you're driving on the highway, your car, there's a self-driving car next to you, which is filming you in real time. And, you know, NSA or somebody gets access to that footage and can now listen into your car based on, I don't know, the vibrations of the book, the pages and the piece of paper that were in your hands while you were being self-driven around. That is just creepy. And but the article went beyond that was just one example of the listening, mm-hmm. the listening via cameras. It was also into, like, you know, that facial recognition software, or I should say recognition software, has gotten so good that if you add in relevant metadata to, you know, like your location patterns and your habits, that they don't even need to see your face and you can be identified in videos retroactively.
Yeah, just based on your behavior.
Right.
Which is wild to think about.
So if you imagine like a CCTV, you know, a surveillance cameras like in London, and some, you know, I've read a couple of books where that's kind of like a major plot point where they're trying to get mm-hmm. access to the camera data and say, okay, where is this person right now? Is this person around right now? Is anybody on this street right now? But they're, you know, they're looking for a person. This is kind of like the explosion of additional footage combined with the capability of artificial intelligence or machine learning algorithms to identify somebody on their face or other attributes and just immediately be like, where is, you know, Laura Palmer? And just be like, there's got to be a camera somewhere that picked up Laura Palmer.
Picked her up. Yeah. Yeah. This is wild. Didn't we have an episode a while back, talking about, using user, or I guess, behavior as like verification for a payment method? What was that?
Oh, that was there was a tattoos one, you know, like individual sort of unique objects mm-hmm. or features, or your face was another one. You could just pay with your face, I think, was the.
Yeah, I think that was it.
And but this reminds me of another episode that we did where we talked about the smartphone as a mouse cursor. So mm-hmm. if you have sort of advanced tracking set up on your website, you can track where the user's mouse pointer is hovering as they're visiting the page, and it can give you an indication of where they're focusing their attention, because people tend to move the pointer where their eye is going. So you can do these heat maps of how people are kind of hovering around your page. And if you imagine that same sort of analytics, the behavioral analytics that you could tie into a smartphone that had location services turned on, you could say, okay, people are hovering around this particular area, or this person hovers around these particular areas, which can correlate to an interest in those mm-hmm. areas. So like my phone hovers around Starbucks and my office and right. home, and it could give you a heat map on a real map, a geographic map, not a heat map of your web page, of all sorts of information about a given person's behavior, interests, gets a little, like, even freakier.
When you go to the gym.
Yeah, it gets even freakier because you can project that into the future if the patterns are strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this ties into last week's episode. We were talking about, you know, how predictive do these things get, and if you A-B messaging to people who exhibit, who you have so much, it doesn't matter what their name is, you have so much information about a particular individual who's anonymous to you, but you have the information, you know it's hovering around this person, and you find enough people that match that pattern, and you A-B test messaging to them. Let's just say it's not political. Let's just say it's, you know, for selling sneakers.
Okay.
Then the effectiveness of driving the demand for a particular pair of sneakers, it would almost be brainwash level effective.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like cheating.
It kind of goes beyond, like, I prefer, you know, I go to websites, they have ads on them. And and I prefer when the ads are relevant, because when they're not relevant, they're usually pretty offensive. So imagine if, and so I like the idea of having, I'm not against ads in general. They're not going to go away.
No, ads have to be a thing. They've always had to be a thing. And they're annoying, but they're less annoying if they're more relevant.
Mm-hmm. I almost feel like this is probably just like, I'm sure this is just old man, get off my lawn, but it feels like there's a point where they're too relevant, where it's like too, never mind the spooky thing, but like going so far beyond relevant that if marketers can, God, I can't decide if this is good or bad, but it's certainly going to be possible.
Yeah, where, it's like where the ads don't just like suggest something to you that they think you might like. It's kind of like, oh, you need to buy this thing because this is the person you are.
Right. And to do it in a way that is almost impossible to resist. That's what I'm getting at, where it's, you know, and especially when you're talking about addictive type of behaviors and things that are, you know, the kind of things that you resolve to stop doing on New Year's Eve, and then just being able to just incredibly focus, target a message about selling a particular product or encouraging a particular behavior, or even feeding that information back into the product development and creation to create things that will be even more irresistible.
And yeah, and now you can gather all of that feedback with a bunch of cheap cameras that don't have to worry about sophisticated audio pickup.
That people currently can't, there's no way to opt out of. So like I could opt out of carrying a smartphone, I can opt out of going on Facebook, but you can't opt out of being seen walking around.
Right, and you can't opt out of being recorded in some like grocery store security camera.
Mm-hmm. So it starts to get into, I mean, it'll turn legal. I think it has to turn legal because the technology is so cheap and it's so sophisticated, and there are so many potential economic upsides for certain parties that it will make sense to do this until it's perhaps not allowed, or as a society we decide that it's not cool.
I think we'll more likely to decide as a society that we don't care.
Yeah, I mean, you see, it's demonstrated over and over that convenience outweighs privacy. People don't care that much about privacy in general. I mean, when the Snowden thing happened, it was like, I can't tell you how many people were like, you know, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. I don't care if the NSA is snooping.
Yeah.
And his point, which I think he is well put, is that, you know, he says something along the lines of, you know, to paraphrase, it's important to keep in mind that, oh God, how does he say it? It's important to keep in mind that at times in our history, things that were legal were not right.
Mm-hmm.
So that, in other words, there can be a disconnect between what's legal and what's right. And the laws can change. So can you retroactively be, I mean, you can't be accused of, but could you be retroactively denied coverage for something that you did 6 years ago that you said in private, but was reflected in a potato chip bag on a YouTube video? You know, I don't know. It's just so, I mean, I've said many times that privacy's gone, like forget it, but it's even worse than I thought it was when I used to say that.
Yeah, because you didn't think about these roving 360 degree cameras driving around all over the place.
Yeah, that you can't opt out of. It's like one thing to be like, to say, oh, I'm not, you know, I know a few people, they're older, who just refuse to get cell phones, and they're sort of, you know, we kind of goof on them like tinfoil hat type of jokes. But it's like, man, how do you...
You can't, you can't opt out of it all.
unless it becomes illegal. And obviously there'll be a huge gap there because there'll be no outcry until it's already happening.
Right.
And people start to see negatives and then they're like, oh wait, this is not cool.
Yeah. But by that point it'll be commonly in use by that point, and there'll be enough money behind it that, you know,
yeah. So, I mean,
it won't matter.
Right. It's like, so, and it's not just the cars, like, because you'd be like, oh, well, self-driving cars are going to be, there's satellites too, and surveillance cameras, and there's just, it's just going to be everywhere. It's going to be everywhere. Like, how do you even get off the grid at that point? Mm-hmm. And what are the kind of pros and cons of doing so? Like, does it matter? I don't know if it matters. I guess it doesn't matter if, you know, as long as the, yeah, man, as long as the state or multinational corporations, as long as, you know, any one of 100, maybe 1,000 sci-fi scenarios doesn't play out. It's like this, it's like the theme of every, you know, evil corporation takes over. And this is totally like the scene from, so Blade Runner, we already mentioned, but it's also like Minority mm-hmm. Report, where he walks into the store with the other dude's retina. And
yeah, I was just about to say that.
Yeah. And the store identifies him as this other guy because he's got somebody else's eyeball. But this is like, in this scenario, the real world scenario, there is no retina scan. They don't need that.
Right. I mean, there may be a retina scan, but then if they look at your behavior patterns, they go, oh no, that's actually not him.
Yeah.
The body language is all wrong.
Right. That's not Mr. Chung. That's Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. You can tell by his dazzling smile.
Exactly.
So, you know, imagine walking into a mall. It's just going to be completely surveilled. It already is.
Yeah, it already is for
right now, and no one cares. But imagine if you attach recognition software to those cameras, and all of a sudden they're not cameras, they're eyes.
Yeah, that's the thing. They stop being cameras and they start being eyeballs.
Mhm. And ears and everything else. So it's like, well, I guess not tongues. That'd be so weird.
that'd be weird. That's when it starts getting creepy.
We can smell you based on the potato chip bag. Well, you probably can take a wild guess at what the smell is like with the potatoes. Probably
smell like potato chips.
Probably, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's better than corn chips, but
now I'm hungry. Thanks. So, technology-wise, like, how does this change the way we interact with the world, right? Like,
I don't think it changes it. You can't stop, because you can't get away from it, but at the same time, you can't stop living your life. So I don't think it changes it. I think it just kind of makes you a little more paranoid, maybe.
What is it? I mean, there's so many, you know, where's Cooper right now? And like the Oracle is like, mm-hmm. oh, he just passed the blah, 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 you know?
Yeah. There have been many times I wanted to ask She Who Shall Not Be Named where someone is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why. It just seems like a natural thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like the Weasley clock in the Weasley house that just, like, says where everybody is. And, you know, is that a bad thing? And it all comes back to, I mean, privacy's only been around since, like, the 1800s. Like, the whole concept of privacy is relatively new. Mm-hmm. And there's a great, we'll link to it, there's a great sort of something from the, I think it's the Harvard Law Review, where a judge kind of lays out the importance of privacy and the definition of privacy, what it is and what those rights extend to. Because at one point it was very physical atoms type of thing. Like, people can't take your property or, you know, beat you up, but then, or just invade your physical space.
Now it extends to intellectual property.
Right. And like mental stuff and mm-hmm. and knowledge economy types of things. And let's see if I can remember the quote. There was another quote that was like, maybe it's just something that was a phase. Maybe privacy was a phase because it didn't exist before, and maybe it won't exist later because we turn into one gargantuan 7 billion person village.
Yeah, like we become the Borg.
Yeah, and so you just like this hive mind, and if you want to know where someone is, you just know. You just think that you want to know, and then you know. And or what they're doing or what they're saying, and it's just like zero privacy, like Mark Zuckerberg's wet dream. And and it's like, all right, well, is that bad? It seems bad to me, but I grew up in an environment where that wasn't the way it was. And it was kind of presented to me as bad, that loss of privacy was a bad thing. But what really, but I never thought about it. Like, what are we losing if we have no privacy? And I think the answer to that was also raised in the article, where it was a female professor whose name I should remember, but I don't. And she said that privacy is a space for us to experiment in a way that you can't do when you are being watched.
Right, like it's a safe place.
Mm-hmm. And I 100%, from personal experience, know exactly what this means, and I can give you an anecdote.
Okay.
You know, I'm a musician. I went to music school, and you practice guitar, like, you know, whatever it is, singing, guitar, piano, drums, all these things I practice.
Right. There's drums at our house, like, all hours of the day now.
Yes.
So I can relate.
Mm-hmm. And it is not just me, but it's definitely a personality trait of mine. I cannot stand knowing that someone's listening to me practice. Mm. And at times when I've been, you know, I suppose perhaps related, when you do practice and someone can hear you, like when I was in high school and, you know, my sister's room was the one right down the hall, and I would drive her crazy. It drove her crazy. It's so annoying. It's so annoying listening to a musician practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so repetitive. Oh my God, you can't put up with it. Like, I can't even listen to it.
It's repetitive, and like all of the accompanying music is missing.
Right. Like, you don't know what's going through their mind, so it just sounds like craziness.
Right.
But there's a more important thing, which is that if you know you're being watched, it turns into a performance, and it makes it impossible to get into the zone that you need to get into to practice the piece.
Right. You become self-conscious about it.
Right. And so I know this is true, and I know it's a phenomenon, but I don't know if it's good or bad, because one thing it enables, which I think is clearly bad, is that you're practicing in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to, on the one hand, it's good. It allows you to kind of explore uncharted territory without fear of embarrassment or criticism.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you can pick up bad habits. You can be doing something that's maybe not good, but you don't have any feedback on it.
Yes, you have no feedback, exactly. Yeah. And if you were always, if you just, you know, you see street musicians, they're unbelievable because they're constantly getting this feedback. They're constantly interacting with a crowd, and they become these amazing entertainers because, you know, I'm not saying they don't also practice back in their room, but when you're just running scales on an electric guitar, you are, it's kind of like working on just your biceps in the gym.
Yeah.
You know, you can become, it's, and you, I saw it all the time in music school, you can become very disproportionate, where you're just amazing at this particular gymnastic move. Like, I can do this amazing black backflip, but I can't do all these basic things. You know, I can't do a somersault. I can't do anything. I can do this crazy move on my guitar, but I can't play a blues progression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it allows you to go into very unrealistic and frankly, in a lot of cases, unproductive place. So I can see both sides of it. I don't think it's necessarily good or bad. It just changed the way things are.
Yeah, and if the norm was the opposite, would it matter? Would it be bad?
I think we'd have a lot more amazing musicians if you weren't allowed to practice in private. If you practice all the time, like, here's practice. After dinner, we all sit around and as a family, we jam. You'd have so many more amazing musicians. And when I say amazing, I mean, you'd have more musicians that could move an audience, you know, emotionally and physically. So if you think that's a good thing for a musician to be able to do, we would definitely have more of them if you were not allowed to practice in private.
Yeah. Do you think people would just naturally over time just become less self-conscious and less kind of caught up in that sort of fear of failure or fear of being judged, just because the idea of hiding away somewhere and doing your own thing is it's no longer just an idea, because that's just not how it's done.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
Do you think you would get over a lot of that?
I think it's a natural thing. I think it's a natural human thing. And so I think what would happen is you'd probably have a lot fewer musicians. Mm. But the ones that you had would be way better at moving an audience. So people who were like me, I'm okay. But I never would have stuck with music if I was like constantly being watched. I really don't think I would have, because there was a super awkward phase where I didn't start until I was like 15 or 16. So I was highly aware of my deficiencies. Like I was old enough to know that I sucked.
Right.
And that probably if I was not able to get over that hump in private, I probably would have given up. So, which arguably would have been a good thing. I mean,
I don't know.
Who knows? I don't know. But I look at Cooper and he's he has a similar characteristic. I don't think it's uncommon, but I certainly have it, where he doesn't like to do things that he thinks he'll do poorly. He doesn't want to do it. And he didn't learn to draw for a long, long time. He couldn't hold a pencil right. It was like a monkey holding a pencil, like in a fist. Mm-hmm. And then like overnight it flipped. And I don't know what he was doing, if he was in private or if something just clicked with him mentally, but all of a sudden he was like drawing really well. And so he has that embarrassment thing. Like he knows that he wants to be good at stuff, but at the same time, he's like totally fine to like whip out a video camera and post a video of him being goofy on YouTube.
Right.
And is intensely interested in how many likes and subscribers and comments he gets.
That's a weird contrast.
Yeah. It's like he's not afraid to be goofy, but he wants to be good at it or something. It's hard to figure out. Or maybe that it's just certain things that he is sensitive to.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he feels like, okay, people put the YouTube videos out there and it's fun. But being able to sit down and draw a picture, that's more serious. That's something that people are gonna critique that a lot more, or they're really not, but maybe it feels that way.
Yeah, I think the choice of words is perfect. I think he takes it's serious. For some reason, this is serious, and he doesn't want to do poorly at something that's important or something. Mm-hmm. Where just doing it on a Lego unboxing video, he doesn't consider serious.
Right, because it's just a Lego unboxing.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, he's just drawing a troll face. Like that's not serious either, but for some reason, he considers it that way.
Yeah. The YouTube probably feels more like playing.
Yeah. I guess we're going down a rabbit hole, but the point is, like, what effect would it have on the next generation where there's no going off the grid? Like, everyone knows who you are. Everyone knows what you're doing. If somebody wants to listen, they can. What does that do for, like, the arts? Just to pick the example. Mm-hmm. For the performing arts in particular, where it's like, ugh. If you're always potentially, if there's always an eye over your shoulder.
And an ear.
And an ear. Hopefully not a tongue.
Yeah.
Then what is it? You have to imagine that is going to change culture dramatically. That'd be a big effect on like who's got the confidence to become an artist or really push the envelope on anything.
On anything, yeah.
I'd love to talk to a doctor about this. I wonder what happens in like Doctorville when they're, because it's called, a practice. Like we have a practice. And I wonder if any of that happens in private, like studying. Yeah. I don't know. It'd be interesting. Cause I'm wondering if it would extend to the professions.
I think it would extend to a lot of scientific professions, especially when you get into fields of science that are more theoretical and, but there's a lot more experimentation and what have you going on.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to try out some new experiment? And, maybe it's different because you're going into that with a lot of evidence-based research and you have, a well-formed hypothesis behind something. You're not just randomly, oh, hey, let's try this today and see how it goes. So maybe it's different because you have that sort of logical and scientific backing. And it's less of a personal sort of emotional investment.
Right. I read this thing recently. I don't think it was part of the same article. I think it was just coincidental. Might have been the same article, but that people who have spent time in public nude, like at like a beach or
nudist colony,
yeah, mm-hmm. that they're generally happier, like measurably happier than the average bear, because and the thought process was that it's like, oh, I don't look as bad as I thought. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Everybody's kind of like normal, yeah, more or less.
We're all ugly.
So. Instead of just like, you know, really the people that you would normally see, what is it, in flagro delectante? That's totally not it.
Yeah. No, that's not it.
The fancy word for nude. And, you know, who generally people who do that as a profession, let's say, are prepared to bear all and probably work out like crazy to look above average. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I keep coming back to this thing, like I've got this Nest Cam in my office and I work out in a gym in my office. So I frequently am changing in my office in front of a webcam that only I have access to theoretically. But it's certainly crossed my mind that, you know, I'll be like in some awkward pose trying to get my sock off and my bum is facing toward the camera. I'm like, boy, somebody's getting a load of that right now. And maybe it's because I'm almost 50 and I don't care really anymore. I don't think when I was younger, I would have been this cavalier about it, but mm-hmm. I kind of feel like in a situation like that, I kind of don't care how unflattering it is because you're spying on me. Like,
right. Like if you're getting an ugly picture, you deserve it.
Right. You know, get your own brain bleach. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah. Yeah, you shouldn't have been looking.
Right. It's like I'm not. It's so weird. It occurs to me on a regular basis. And I'm like, why don't I care? This is the question I keep asking myself. Why don't I care if somebody's logged into this? Because I really don't. Right. But at the same time, I'm vain enough to be like, geez, I wish I looked better. But for some reason, I don't think I would care if somebody, because what are they going to do? It's not like I was trying to look, you know, I'm like modeling my way around the office.
Right.
Trying to look like I'm in a Calvin Klein ad.
Right. You're really just changing pants.
Oh, so it kind of gets down to, was I trying or not? So like, and that's with the guitar too. I think that has something to do with it. Cause with guitar, I was really trying. I was mm-hmm. really trying to be better. And so if I got some unwanted criticism, it would have really hurt. And if I was trying to look good and maybe, I don't know, look alluring, or it's like embarrassing to even think of, then it would hurt more because I was trying and someone was right. Like, no, you're falling short of the mark there. But if I'm bending over trying to get my shoe on or off or whatever, or I trip because I'm trying to take my shorts off over my shoes or something ridiculous, like a Will Ferrell movie. I kind of don't care because I'm not trying to look good. I'm not trying to impress anybody. And you just interrupted me. And look, if you saw something horrible, then that's your problem.
It's your problem. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, it's like me with artwork or building something or making something. Cause I tend to do that a lot. Mm. And there's projects that I genuinely care about and I want to do well on them. And if I don't, then, you know, it's like, and someone says something or what have you, it's like, oh, that's, you know, that's really disappointing. But then there's other stuff that it's like, eh, I'm just playing around and this turned out like crap, but you know, here's 12 pictures of it on my blog.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is weird. The distinction. I wonder if it's just personal. I suppose it is with everybody's different, like things that they've chosen to care about.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the camera's always on, always, and you are potentially being judged on something you care about while you're trying to get better at it, mm-hmm. it's probably going to drive you. It's probably going to stop you from doing it. You probably stop doing it.
Yeah, probably.
It depends on how big the gap is and how strong your confidence is, I suppose, but it's certainly not going to be a fun feeling.
You're either going to get over it and get past it, or you're going to like not do it. One of the two.
Imagine being a middle schooler and trying to live through this.
Oh, God. Oh. Middle school is the worst.
Ugh. I mean, the only hope, I suppose, is that everybody would be as exposed. Mm-hmm. And maybe it gets, maybe it has the nudist colony effect. Like, we're all weird. You can't pick, here, don't pick on me. We're all, look. See what Stacy did yesterday?
Right.
But, you know, the bullying and stuff that goes on in social media now is, it's pretty bad. So, like, if it seems that way, you know, I've read about that, but mm-hmm. it seems like if the group wants to turn on someone, they would certainly have plenty of evidence.
Yeah, they'd have a lot more fodder.
Mm. Yeah, God. Yeah, that's got to be the worst. Like, oh, my yeah. God. Yeah, I mean, just
middle school.
I can't even imagine being in high school with like middle school or high school with smartphones. Never mind, you know, like an artificial intelligence watching me.
What? Yeah, an AI watching you.
Yeah. Oh, great! A godlike intelligence is judging my every move.
Yeah, it's like that reminds me when I was in middle school. Our principal every morning as kids were coming in and stuff. He used to just like walk down the halls with a video camera, just like recording the kids coming in and doing stuff. And then that video that he recorded from that morning would just like play on the morning announcements.
What?
Yeah, it was really weird. Like that video would just play as they were doing the morning announcements. And I don't know if the purpose of it was to like maybe use the peer pressure of it to improve behavior in the mornings. Or if he was just doing it for some other weird sadistic reason that I can't get my head around. But yeah, I remember that very much.
That is so weird.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm completely hung up on the fact that your public address system in high school evidently had a video screen. Like, what do you mean it played? Like,
yeah, I mean, there was...
How would you watch it?
I don't remember the details. I remember it would come through on the television that was in the classroom.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow, you guys were super advanced compared to us back in the Stone Ages.
Well, it was about... I was in middle school about 10 years after you were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had like a shoebox with... It looked like something that came out of like Alan Alda era MASH.
Like up on the wall?
Yeah, a shoebox up on the wall with like a grill on it.
Yeah, yeah, we had that too. But we also had the, you know, you could... Stuff would come through to the whole school on the, you know, I guess play the video in the office.
Mm.
But yeah, I remember that being a thing, and maybe the point of doing it was so kids would behave when they were coming in the morning, because if you didn't, then everyone in the school would see you being an idiot.
Wow. I mean, that's a pretty good example, actually, because I think that is wrong. That seems like a poor way to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, oh, here's an idea. Let's publicly shame people. I don't know if that's the right way to go. And you could, the possibilities for this to go horribly wrong are just endless.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a long list.
A long list of really, really bad outcomes. And maybe, you know, personally, I'm probably just getting, you know, Cooper's not going to know or care. But I have been, I heard that right around the same time that we were talking about this, maybe you told me, was that... 1984 has been sold out for like,
yeah,
yes. Like 6 weeks. The publisher is like printing 1984 copies as fast as they can.
Yeah, I don't think I'm the one that told you about it, but I do remember reading about it. So
that's
yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's suddenly become popular again.
Yeah, 1984 and Brave New World are the two that keep coming up.
Yeah, and it's funny because I can see. Like the political motivations that everyone has behind why this has become popular again.
Mm.
But, you know, I'm not sure politics plays into it. You know, I'm not sure the current political climate really matters. I think to me, it's the changes in technology and stuff that make me, I don't know how to say what I'm thinking.
I think maybe I'll take away at it. I'm less scared by the state of using this than by corporations.
Mm.
And the emergent properties of the new system, which would be probably, like we were saying, most painful to middle school age kids.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, you know, like I remember I read an article about teenagers on Tumblr, and it was like there was a phase on Tumblr where it was like it was just a thing where teenagers kind of like outdo each other with this sort of, you know, F my life type of post. And they had there were a bunch of them were really popular and they were amazing. They're like almost poetic in their capture of awkward situations. And one of them was about somebody's, it was, I'm going to butcher this, but because it was just perfectly captured in this extremely short, like tweet length post. It was just text. And it was about this girl, like, she said something like, you know, OMG, my shirt shoulder slipped down and, you know, Billy saw my bra strap. And then in all caps, she's like, no one must know I wear a bra. She's like, something, like just totally freaking out. It, you know, partially, I think it was a little bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But I remember stuff like that, like just being mortified that it was moving into some new phase, like whatever it was, shaving or something even more embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And oh, they're just mortified.
Yeah.
And if somebody knew, it just, oh man, I was very prone to embarrassment as a kid. So I suppose that's true for most people, like, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, get ready to be embarrassed, people.
Yeah. Yeah, they can now hear and see everything.
Oh, the potato chip bag.
The potatoes have eyes.
Wow.
Yeah, thank you. I'm kind of proud of that one.
That is right up there. Okay, that's a good place to stop.
We're almost at an hour.
Yeah, we're totally.
Yeah, we kind of went off on the weeds. But interesting stuff, though.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will add all of this, all of these articles to the show notes, and remember to email them this week so yes. that you have them in your catalog, in your inbox. But that's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, would you like to get on that email list we've been talking about the whole show? You can do so by going to terrifyingrobotdog.com and looking for the Keep Me in the Loop button. That URL again is terrifyingrobotdog.com, and we will send you out an email every Friday with show notes and a link to listen to the show. Hope to see you there.